Canine Conservationist podcast, where we're positively obsessed with conservation detection dogs. Join us every week to discuss ecology, odor dynamics, dog behavior, and everything in between. I am your host, Kayla Fratt, one of the co-founders of Canine Conservationists, where we train dogs to detect data for land managers, researchers, agencies, and NGOs. Today, unfortunately, I am recording from a Starbucks in San Salvador, and I do apologize for my audio quality. We're going to make sure that Rayanne, our guest, has much better audio quality as she's going to be sharing all the most pertinent information today. Today, we're here talking to Rayanne Craven all about medical alert dogs. So, Rayanne, why don't you start off with telling us a little bit about yourself, the dogs you share your life with, and how you got into this role?
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. So, like you said, my name's Rayanne. I've been involved with dogs since I was a kid, like most of us, I think, that start out in dog training. But so for many, many years, but the past 4 years, I've been working professionally as a trainer, both with pet dogs and with service dogs, primarily type 1 diabetic alert service dogs, but also some PTSD anxiety and, you know, working with clients with those dogs, training them for those purposes. As far as personal dogs, I have two. I have a 13 and a half year old Labrador Retriever he's retired. He just does what he wants. And then I have a 2 year old Hungarian Moody that I do compete with in some dog sports like fast cat, dock diving, hoping to dabble in some rally, maybe some barn hunt. So just some sport things with him, maybe some scent work since, you know, I do have experience with that. But unfortunately, where I'm located here in Mississippi, Mississippi is kind of, doesn't really have a lot of dog sports. So there's a lot of traveling outside of the state involved. And so depending on how busy I am with work, that kind of limits how often we're able to do sports. But we do what we can. And the virtual titling has been really helpful in us being able to get different titles and things. But yeah, and so as far as where I work in person, training both pet dogs and then service dogs for Animal Medical Center in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and then Hub City Service Dogs in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And then also work virtually with our mutual friend, Maggie Pearson at Tenacious Dog Training. And I offer both virtual consultations and sessions for, once again, pet dog, puppy training, and then also service dog training.
Yeah, well, thank you for that, Rayanne. And I think, you know, for folks at home who are wondering why we have you on the show, you know, selfishly for me, it's just something that I've been really curious about as far as how to work with these medical alert dogs. We're going to get into a lot of my specific questions here, but I'm also hoping that for folks at home who maybe are interested in getting into a career with working dogs or service dogs, scent work, those sorts of things, but for whatever reason are struggling to break into the conservation dog field. You know, we talk all the time on this show about how hard that can be. This may be another venue of interest and hopefully can help spark some ideas for other ways to get involved with dogs that are working for good. So I know personally, most of my thinking about medical detection dogs are more on the side of, you know, the dogs that are screening for SARS-CoV-2, dogs that are screening for, you know, ovarian cancer, because I think there's a little bit more crossover between that sort of work and what you do. So why don't you describe to us what it is that you do and how, what that actually looks like? What is this job for a dog?
Yeah, so a medical alert service dog, as far as what it's considered and like what I train for, is so we're having the dog learn that whenever they smell the certain scent, so for instance, what I have most experience with, and there's definitely a lot of different medical conditions that people have been able to train dogs for, but once again, what I have the most experience with is type 1 diabetes. And what we do is we train the dog to detect the person's low blood glucose level, so low blood sugar. And some clients do also want the dog to alert whenever they have a high blood sugar level. But primarily people want lows because those are more dangerous. And in case someone doesn't know, when it comes to diabetes, if someone's blood sugar gets too low, it could lead to them being in a, you know, diabetic coma. If it happens at night, you know, they just might not know, and it very well could lead to death. So definitely nothing to, you know, play around with or anything like that. And a lot of my clients do have what's called a continuous glucose monitor to monitor their blood sugar. And it's usually synced up with a device or even their phone for the to alert them when their blood sugar hits a certain level. But oftentimes we find that the dogs are sometimes able to detect it before the continuous glucose monitor. And so the dog, it's kind of having two layers of safety there. So you've got the dog, and then you've also got your medical device. I usually don't recommend, you know, I'm not saying, okay, get rid of your medical device. You've got the dog now. No, they work in tandem. It's kind of almost a little bit of a fail-safe kind of system there. But so we have the dogs, and what we want them to learn is when you smell this particular scent, and there's still a lot of research out there as far as what exactly the dog is picking up on. We're not sure if it's there's certain compounds in the, and I primarily use saliva. So we have the person collect their saliva during a low blood sugar event or high blood sugar event within a certain range. And we don't know if there's compounds in the saliva or maybe there's that. And then also the dog is perhaps picking up on subtle symptoms. You know, we know dogs are fantastic at just picking up little nuances, you know, in our behaviors and everything. So maybe it's the person's starting to sweat or is getting shaky, whether it's, you know, just a combination of all of it. But the dogs are definitely able to, you know, pick up on something in that scent. And so we, you know, train the dog that when you smell this scent, you get rewarded for it. And I know in some scent detections, people will use like toys as a reward. I know in a lot of like training for you know, contraband or different things like that, they prefer toys for rewards. I prefer using food. And usually when I'm introducing a dog to a scent, I'm going to try to use kibble just because we're going to get lots and lots of repetitions. I want at least 1,000 repetitions of you smell this scent, you get a treat. You smell this scent, get a treat over and over again. Because I want that dog really, really motivated. And so I want a dog, obviously, that's very food motivated and has, you know, really good nose, one that's just nosy, basically, you know. So I want a dog that's always sniffing, always interested in what you're doing, and really, really rewarding them for investigating, you know, that scent. And so that's, you know, basically how we start out is dog smells the scent, you get rewarded for it. And then we kind of progress as far as getting the dog to do what we call live alerts, you know, on the person themselves. But yeah, as far as just, you know, kind of overall what a medical alert service dog is, they detect a certain scent on that, you know, their person's body, and then they alert that either that person, or we may also have to train the dog to smell that scent and go alert a caretaker and then bring the caretaker back to that person. So that's a whole, you know, all another behavior chain there that we have to work in, which can make it, you know, a little bit complicated versus just, okay, you smell the scent, alert to it. We've got to get that dog, you know, going away from the source, which can be hard, you know, sometimes, especially when we put in thousands of repetitions of, you know, smelling this scent. But, you know, it's definitely doable, but it just can make it a little more complicated. But yeah, as far as what a medical alert service dog is, they're smelling that particular scent that you've trained them on, and they're, whenever they detect the presence of that scent, they're alerting in, you know, some way.
Yeah. Okay. So I think the biggest thing that is really different from what we do, I mean, there's a lot of big things that are really, really large differences. But one that really strikes me is a huge proportion of my dog's job is moving through the environment and, you know, working air currents and vegetation and topography, trying to find that odor, like once they hit it, and then sourcing that odor. And all of that seems to be more or less eliminated for you all. And it's much more about kind of proofing the dog's ability to identify that odor kind of no matter what, and when they haven't been actively told to search. So it sounds like our initial imprinting process is quite similar, whether, you know, you're using food for the most part, we're using toys for the most part. But how do you actually build out to helping the dog understand that this needs to happen kind of no matter what? And yeah, that I think that is the part of your job that fascinates me maybe the most.
Yeah, yeah. And it's one of those things that that's why, honestly, a lot of times there can be a high washout rate for service dogs, because it takes a really, really motivated dog, because you think about, like I was talking about earlier, you know, you need a dog that can wake up in the middle of the night, you know, and alert on a scent. So these dogs are working, you know, pretty much 24/7. And yeah, as you said, there is a lot of proofing that's involved. Whenever, you know, I'm working with a client and we've gone through kind of the initial stages of, you know, introducing the scent, and then I move on next to teaching what's called like a scent pattern, which I learned from Debbie Kay's Sweet Snoopers program, which is available through Atlas Assistance Dogs. And I highly recommend that course to anyone that is thinking about going into service dog training, specifically medical alert training. Because it's pretty in depth, and then you do have to submit like videos of you working with the dog, and it's just a really good course. But in teaching that scent pattern, you teach the dog to search. So just kind of give you a visual: it's ankle, knee, and then like hip, and then you switch over to other hip, knee, ankle. So it's almost like a you know, just up and, you know, back down kind of motion. So that way those areas of the body tend to produce a lot of sweat. And so that way, you know, even though I'm training the dog on saliva, your body's still putting off some sort of, you know, compound, whether it's saliva in your saliva or your sweat, and the dog is able to detect it. So teaching that scent pattern, we can put it on a cue. So if perhaps, you know, the client maybe feels a little off and like the dog's still, you know, in the training process, they can cue the dog to check. And that's typically the cue that I use. But of course, you can use whatever cue, and the dog is able to kind of scent up and down the person. If they do detect that scent, then they're able to provide their alert. And usually we do, you know, like a pawing alert or a nose, you know, nudge to the leg, or, you know, a hand maybe, some, you know, clients, there's different, of course, alerts you can do. And I'm sure, you know, you guys also train different alerts for depending on what it is, you know, you're wanting. You can also train the dog to, you know, push a button or go, you know, and get a caretaker, instead of alerting that person, because if it's, you know, a child or someone, you know, who, let's say their blood sugar has dropped really low, they may not be able, you know, mentally capable to make good decisions because their blood sugar has dropped so low. So we have the dog instead go and get someone, and bring them, you know, back to the person. And so definitely there's a lot of proofing, involved in that. And so, like I said, once we get past that initial, you know, scent pattern and we do have it on cue, we still need the dog to just periodically check on their own. And that's where it really helps to have basically a nosy dog, a dog that's just really interested in what you're doing, all, you know, always wants to sniff things. Primarily the dogs that I've worked with, come from a hunting lab breeder. And so they breed them specifically for their noses. And, you know, they actually do imprint the puppies in the whelping box on low blood glucose scent, which is not, it's not 100% necessary. So if someone's listening that, you know, is looking to get a diabetic, you know, alert dog, you know, is looking for a breeder, it's not 100% necessary to do that. You can definitely train the scent later on. But I have seen some really good results when it is introduced, you know, to puppies at a very, very young age, just because they're like, hey, wait a minute, you know, this scent's familiar to me. And so sometimes it can, you know, speed up the process a little bit. But yeah, it's really, I mean, it's amazing what they're able to, you know, pick up, and everything. And, you know, once we kind of go through this process and we start proofing, you know, I'll add in various scents. So we're not trying to, you know, trick the dog. So I'm not going to, you know, the first time we start adding in other scents to kind of prove, I'm not going to throw in, you know, some turkey, you know, or something. I don't want to, you know, confuse the dog or make them, you know, stressed, you know, as far as, oh, you know, there's some turkey in this scent tin, you know, over here. So eventually, yeah, I'm going to start, you know, putting in some harder to ignore scents. But to begin with, we're going to start out with some, you know, really mild things like, you know, unscented, quote unquote, you know, lotion or, you know, something like that. It's just something different. So the dog may stop and go, oh, what is this? But then usually they go right straight to that scent we've been training on, you know, for thousands and thousands of repetitions, but it just makes them pause for a second. And then they go back to that original scent. And then I just like to, you know, gradually add in other scents, a lot of trainers, and I have used it too as well, use what's called a scent wheel, and you may be familiar with that, but you know, where you have you know, multiple scents set out, whether it's on like a little Lazy Susan or a big you know, kind of contraption that you make with like paint cans, where you can set the different scents down in there, the dog alerts on the correct one, you reward, and then you spin it around. So it kind of helps randomize it, because of course, as you know, people, and like I said earlier, dogs are super great at, you know, tuning into our body language and watching us for subtle cues. We can't accidentally, you know, be giving these subtle cues that, oh, you know, you're looking at it or you're leaning toward the correct scent. And we definitely don't want that to happen. We've got to be completely, you know, unbiased and not be giving our dogs cues as to what the, you know, correct scent is. So that can kind of help randomize it for us, you know, using a scent wheel or something like that, because we've got to have the dog obviously alerting to the correct scent, because it's, you know, could be, I mean, it is, you know, life-threatening to the person if the dog doesn't get it right. And so just proofing on various scents, like I said, gradually making them harder. I will even use like my own saliva. I don't have diabetes. And you know, sometimes we'll even, have other people like in the client's family do it. And a lot of times I will have them, just to be on the safe side, you know, check their blood glucose level before, you know, they give the saliva sample, because just on the off chance, you know, their blood sugar may be in that range that we're training for. You know, we obviously don't want to confuse the dog then, but yeah, just providing these different proofing exercises to where every time that dog chooses that, you know, correct scent from their person of the low blood sugar or the high, you know, depending on what we're training for. And once you train for one, so typically, like I said, most people want the low blood sugar alert. It usually doesn't take very long to add in, you know, that high blood sugar alert as well. So obviously there's something similar to the scents, but yet obviously something different, you know, because it's, I have seen trainers train, you know, two different cues actually, or alert, excuse me, for the dog to give of, you know, is it high or is it low? And the dog's actually able to differentiate. I haven't had a client that needed that. So I personally haven't trained that. I primarily, like I said, most people want the lows trained, because those are the most dangerous. But yeah, it's super interesting just what the dogs are able to do and to alert on. And it's just where some dogs aren't able to succeed, it can be those proofing exercises, because it's not only, you know, the different scents, it's all the different places, you know, and, you know, it's different when they're at home, you know, with their person. And yes, there's, you know, lots of scents around, but then when you're at restaurants, when you're, you know, outdoors, when there's so many different variables and things you have to train for to make sure that dog's going to be able to alert anywhere at any time. And that's where, like I said, it takes a really special dog to be able to do that.
Canine Conservationists offers several on-demand webinars to help you and your dog go along in your journey as a conservation dog team. Our current on-demand webinars are all roughly 1 hour long and priced at $25. They include puppy scent work, all about raising and training a conservation puppy, found it, alerts and changes of behavior, and what you're looking for, teaching your dog a target odor. Find these three webinars along with jackets, treat pouches, mugs, bento boxes, and more over at our website, canineconservationist.org/shop.
Okay, so that makes a ton of sense. And thank you for giving such detailed answers on this. This is exactly what I was looking for. So, you know, again, I think the thing that just keeps breaking my brain about these dogs is, especially within conservation, but also if you look at mine dogs, explosives, you know, drugs, bed bugs, you know, we're cueing these dogs to search, we're asking them to move to their environment in a way that to me seems much more similar to kind of quote-unquote natural hunting behaviors. And that's just not part of what you're asking these dogs to do. So what does it look like when you're trying to move these dogs from the scent wheel towards a more realistic training scenario? Are you like planting cotton swabs on handlers and that are at specific blood sugar levels? And, you know, how do you help make sure that the handlers are not cueing the dogs when they know that that process is happening? That's a lot of different questions all at once, but go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, so I do try to get, you know, when I'm talking with my clients as far as
you know, the scent training and everything. I do really, really reiterate, and I'm sure you understand this as well, as far as like no contamination. So like, for instance, yeah, typically how they collect the saliva is using like dental gauze rolls or Q-tips. The dental gauze rolls I prefer just because it just, you know, soaks up more of the saliva, so it gives the dog more scent to go off of. But they can't have eaten or drank anything within 30 minutes besides like water. You know, so if, for instance, I have a client that their blood sugar is really dropping and they just chugged a Coke, you know, to try to get it back up, you know, they can't collect, you know, a blood sugar sample then. And bless their heart, they're always like, I'm so sorry, we didn't get any scents this week. I'm like, no, please, you've got to take care of yourself. Like, don't be worrying, you know, about getting, these scents whenever your blood sugar is dropping really, really fast, you know? But they do try to collect within a specific range. So typically, what my clients want is like around 70, just because that's whenever it's starting to drop. And it can, you know, drop pretty quickly for some people. I've actually had some clients that wanted higher than that. So what might would honestly be considered somewhat normal, so around like 80, 85, but it's because their blood sugar, they know, and every person's different. But they know it's going to drop really, really quick. And then they also may have other medical conditions, such as gastroparesis, which means that they can ingest a Coke or, you know, glucose tablets or whatever, but their body doesn't process it quickly enough. So, you know, yes, they may have, like I said, took those sugar substances, but their blood sugar is still dropping. So they're like, I need it sooner so I can go ahead and, you know, be taking those really sugary drinks or food or whatever, so I can go ahead and be working because my blood sugar is still going to be consistently dropping. So yeah, we typically collect, you know, have the people collect those saliva at certain levels, whatever level is going to work best for them. And, you know, within that certain range. So we don't want to, you know, if we don't want the dog alerting at, for instance, like 100 blood glucose level, then we're not going to collect at that level. You know, it needs to be within that, you know, specific range that they're looking for. And then, yeah, as far as the training process goes, like I said, really coach my clients on not contaminating it with other scents, really keeping the scents in, you know, specific containers. And then I have them freeze it to preserve those scents and then thaw them out just before training. And then that scent then is only good for about 3 days. And then you have to throw that one away and get another one, you know, and thaw it out. And then also it depends on how often are you using it. And so I really do, you know, coach the clients on really making sure we're not contaminating it, or, you know, the scent has kind of dissipated and we don't want to confuse the dog at all. We want the scent to be really strong, and make sure the dog is really getting the full kind of scent picture there. But yeah, when we're moving from the dog can visibly see the tin, and we don't want the dog to get to where, okay, they're just alerting, you know, on the tin, they're not really sniffing. We do typically have them start hiding the tin like on their person. So maybe to start out with, make it kind of easy. I just have them, you know, tuck it in like the cuff of their pants leg, or, you know, kind of hold it up under their hand where maybe the dog can't see it, you know, exactly, you know, unless they're really, really looking, they're actually having to use their nose. And then from there we can progress to, you know, really, really hiding it, like sticking it in a pocket, jacket pocket or something like that. But we just don't want the dog, like I said, you know, looking for the tin, you know, and not actually sniffing, and making sure, you know, I'm coaching my clients on, like you said, like, no, you can't just, that, you know, you want your dog to succeed. And so, you know, of course, if we're doing like pet dog training, the dog doesn't sit the first time we say it, we may hold the treat up, you know, above their nose, or, you know, move a certain way to get the dog to sit. Well, you can't do that. You know, with scent training, we need that dog to really think and really use their nose and not just sit there and, you know, wait for us to tell them. So, you know, I really make sure, and if I'm coaching, you know, in person, or whether I'm doing it virtually where I'm actually watching them as they're doing a training session, I'll try to remind them, like, you know, don't move, you know, don't, you know, lean that way, or, you know, try to point out, because of course we want, you know, they want their dog to succeed and everything, but I try to remind them in the long run, that's not going to help them, you know, succeed. And if the dog really is struggling, then of course that just lets us know, that's just information for us that, okay, maybe we need to go back a step. Maybe the dog's not understanding the picture fully just yet. And okay, well, we'll just go back a step and really, you know, work those repetitions on the scent, you know, get you reward. And then we can go back to, you know, that step as well. But really, you know, making sure the dog is motivated for that scent. And like I said, just really, really rewarding for it. And that's where, like I said, in my case, I'm looking for a dog that's super food motivated that I can use, you know, just kibble. I have had some client dogs where we had to move up the treat ladder, so to speak, as far as, you know, using little higher value treats. But for the most part, I want a dog that's, you know, motivated for anything, because that way we can get lots of repetitions in without having to worry about, you know, going up the treat ladder and them not really caring that much, because once again, this is something they're going to have to be doing 24/7. So I need a dog that doesn't get bored with it, you know, that doesn't just say, eh, I'm not working for that. I need one that's just, you know, gung-ho for whatever. And that's where, like I said, that food motivation can really come into play, and just being, you know, kind of, like I said, a nosy dog. I actually had a client that told me not too long ago, they have a young female lab, and she was talking about how she's just so nosy and like wanting to get on the counters and look around. And, you know, for most trainers, they're like, oh my gosh, you know, they're counter surfing, you know, kind of freak out about it. But for her, I was actually glad because that lets me know, oh, she's interested. You know, she's trying to figure out what her person's doing and is just nosy, you know? And so I'm like, oh, well, that's actually a good thing. Not that I'm going to encourage the counter surfing. I, you know, gave her some tips to help with that, but that lets me know, okay, that dog's interested in stuff and is, you know, kind of quote unquote nosy. And so I like, you know, to hear that whenever it comes to really getting started, and we are with our scent training and everything. But yeah, so like I said, that motivation is really important. And like it is, of course, you know, having motivation for the scent is important for, you know, your conservation work. But I know, like you said, you're kind of cueing, the dog on the scent, whereas these dogs just, they have to kind of be on alert 24/7, you know, to know when to alert to that scent. And that's where, like we talked a little bit about earlier, I prefer if my clients do have, you know, some sort of medical device, whether it's a continuous glucose monitor or just a glucometer, you know, just check it periodically. And most do, you know, they've lived with diabetes most of the time for many, many years. And so they do try to keep a regular check. But I do stress to people that, you know, these are dogs, and while they're fantastic, and, you know, if you do your training, you know, correctly, very well trained, they're still, you know, dogs, and they're going to make mistakes every now and then. They're not robots. And so it is, of course, still important to obviously follow your doctor's, you know, advice as far as how often to check your blood sugars and working with those different medical equipment and things such as the continuous glucose monitor, because that way you do kind of have almost like a two-layer safety thing of you have the dog and then you have your medical device. Because for instance too, you know, what if your dog is sick, you know, and your dog's not able to be with you? And what if, you know, sometimes dogs, they do, you know, service dogs, they just need a break. And a lot of times people, you know, you may think, you know, the dogs are working all the time, and for the most part they are, but I do encourage my clients too to try to give their dogs a break when they can. Obviously, you know, mental enrichment, just letting them, you know, be able to sniff other things besides, you know, sniffing for that diabetic alert scent, getting out in nature and just allowing them to be a dog, which is important for any dog, but especially a service dog that's just working, you know, all the time and everything. But once again, that's where it comes down to, you want a dog that loves it, that really just loves to work and to find that scent and is just super motivated for it. Because it's not fair if you have a dog that's not super interested in it to really, you know, and well, you're not going to be able to make them, you know, that's going to become pretty evident pretty quickly. But, you know, you just want a dog that just absolutely loves it. And that way it makes it easier for you and easier for the dog, because you're not going to be able to force them. And then it, you know, it just kind of makes it tough on everybody if you even try to.
And so I just want that dog that's really, really motivated for the, you know, the scent once you start pairing it with food. And then you can just kind of go from there.
Yeah, that makes sense and does sound quite familiar to what we do. Are there any other things that you look at within the dog or kind of the handler as part of a successful team? I can imagine you also probably want a dog that's pretty socially oriented and can or will or has bonded really tightly with their handler. I mean, obviously that's important for any detection dog discipline, but when you're really expecting the dog to, you know, be able to detect a what I imagine is a relatively subtle odor change in you. You know, one of my dogs I can imagine would be good at this. And my other, my younger dog is a very independent guy. He doesn't really find a lot of value in being really close to me, even though he is very sniffy and emotionally attuned to me. He doesn't really like working close to me. So anyway, is my hypothesis correct? What else do you kind of look for as far as helping make a team successful in this line of work?
Yeah, yeah. So definitely a dog that, like you said, is really socially connected, really bonded with their person. And my in-person service dog work that I deal with, the organization that I work with, it's not like we take a dog and fully train it from puppy to adult dog and then, you know, transfer it over to the person. We actually get a puppy from a breeder and place that puppy right in the home with the person. And they're a part of the training process the entire time. So from baby puppy all the way to usually about 1.5 to 2 years old, the dog is fully matured, you know, fully trained. Sometimes it may take a little bit longer because every dog is different. And depending too on the client, you know, you have to be really considerate, of course, with as a dog trainer, you know, with any client, but especially someone that has, you know, a medical condition and possibly, you know, other medical disabilities, you know, they're not going to be able to train every single day, you know, and which me either, you know, I'm not able to train every day myself. But, you know, if they're in the hospital for long periods of time and things like that, there could be some setbacks. And so I try to talk with my clients, you know, because sometimes they do get you know, upset because they've gotten far back on their training. You know, we just have to take it one day at a time and, you know, we're going to work through the process. So that's where, you know, it really does help to have a dog that's, you know, super motivated by it. So even if you do have to take a little time off, when you come back to it, the dog's like, oh, great, we're doing this again, you know, and are super, super motivated for it. But yeah, the dog really, you know, I really like for them to have a good bond with their person and the whole kind of other side with it being service dog training. You know, this dog has to go everywhere. And so not only does the dog just have to be good at its job, you know, the task part of the training, you know, the medical alert, they also, you know, have to be great in public and can't be super distracted by other things, by dogs, by people, by sounds, you know, all different things. And so we do have to expose them, you know, to all different manner of things that they could be exposed to later on. So you do have some dogs that maybe they're absolutely fantastic at, you know, medical alert, but they just cannot cope in public, whether it's some fear or, you know, if there's any aggression, they're likely not just going to make the cut anyway as a service dog. But usually, you know, I may see a little fear or maybe too much like exuberance, like the dog just goes absolutely, bonkers, for lack of better words, as far as like jumping, you know, trying to get to people because they are so social, that they just really want to get to people. But at home, they're fantastic, you know, with their tasks. And so that can be kind of hard, you know, talking with people if they really wanted the dog to go everywhere with them. It may not be a good choice, but the dog can still help them out at home, you know, and that's where you have what we call like at-home service dogs, where the dogs are still really able to help them at home, particularly like at nights if it's a diabetic alert. But the dog just isn't able to go, you know, everywhere in public. Maybe they're okay to go to some pet-friendly places every now and then, but as far as being able to, you know, stand at a table and be quiet at a restaurant may not work out. And that doesn't make them a bad dog, obviously. It just means they're maybe not cut out for full public access, as it's called, work. And so to have a dog that's able to do both things is really, really special. And then once again, you know, I've had some dogs that were
absolutely phenomenal in public, but yet they just weren't super motivated for that scent work. And that one's really hard too, because you're like, oh my gosh, this dog, because really public access is the hardest thing to train for, because you can never train for everything. You know, there's always something that's going to happen out in the world that just throws you for a loop, you know, that you're like, okay, well, you know, I didn't think I would have to train for that. But, so when you have a dog that's just really, really great out in public, and then they're not able to do the task, that makes it really hard. But for the most part, I've only had a few dogs where they just really weren't super motivated. But for the most part, the task training comes pretty natural to these guys. And that's where, like I said, too, picking a good breeder, or, you know, if you're doing evaluations on dogs, you know, kind of looking for those, personality traits, like I was talking about, of being really food motivated and really just kind of nosy, using their nose a good bit, and sniffing. It really comes in handy. And getting a dog, whether it's from a shelter, whether it's from a breeder or wherever, just looking for those characteristics can really help in the long run.
Yeah, that absolutely makes a lot of sense. Well, I think I'd love to kind of round out this conversation with maybe a bit of a basic question. So how often are these dogs actually making alerts? Is this the sort of thing where a dog could go its entire career without having an event that they're involved in, or are they more likely to be doing this on like a daily or weekly basis? And I'm sure that varies quite a bit depending on the disease and other management on the healthcare side, but just to kind of give me a ballpark, I really have no idea where that goes.
Yeah. So typically, it's going to be every day. And once again, that's where you got to have a really motivated dog for them to do this every single day. Pretty much, like I said, for the diabetic alert, it's every day, every other day, definitely several times a week. There may be some other medical conditions where hopefully it's not happening that often, but it could, and so these dogs being able to do this day in, day out. And you do, even though the dog may be doing it, you know, pretty much every single day, I do really have my clients, even after I, you know, quote unquote, kind of graduate them, because that's another aspect that people may not know about service dogs, at least in the United States. There's no official certification for service dog. There's no legal certification. As long as the dog is performing some sort of task, and something like emotional support is not considered a task. It has to be a specific task, like a medical alert of some kind or a retrieval task of some sort that helps mitigate that specific person's disability. So there's no legal certification or anything like that. But when I, you know, quote unquote, graduate a client, I still tell them, you know, yes, you know, you're graduated, but you need to train at least once a week with your dog. Get out, you know, keep collecting scent samples, keep, you know, doing some training sessions with the little scent tins or hiding it on your person, because maybe, like you said, you know, if the person's diabetes or whatever medical condition is pretty well managed, the dog may not be alerting as often. And so we still want to keep that motivation up, because no, you're not always going to necessarily have treats on you. You know, if you're out and about in a store or something, the dog alerts on you. Yes, I want the client to really praise the dog and everything, but we still want to keep that motivation super high. So keeping that level of training to where the dog is alerting, as soon as possible, as soon as they detect that scent, we want to keep doing those training sessions. But yeah, they're typically alerting pretty regularly. And that's where, you know, we're making that transition from, you know, doing training sessions to actual what we call live alerting on the person. Typically, I have clients that we're still in the training process, and they'll, you know, message me or whatever, go, I think they're trying to tell me, you know, about my blood sugar, because maybe we haven't, we're still kind of in the process of teaching like whatever alert. So maybe the dog's just, you know, quote unquote, acting weird. And they're like, I did check my blood sugar and it was, you know, starting to get low. And so what I typically have my clients do is keep like a little bit of a journal of, okay, you know, what was the dog doing? You know, what was your blood glucose level? And so we can kind of see, is the dog actively picking up on the scent, you know, without us, you know, having that tin. And that's great if they are. And then we kind of keep that record. And that's when, you know, along with all the public access training stuff, Once that's kind of complete, if I have, you know, months records of this dog doing live alerts, that lets me know the dog understands the job. And then we just switch to more of, like I said, kind of a maintenance training, versus like, okay, we still need to be actively training until this dog makes this kind of switch over from structured training sessions to actually doing these live alerts and everything.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Rhianne. I feel like I've learned a lot. Is there anything that you'd like to circle back to or expand upon before we round out here?
The only thing I would say is, yeah, if you're, this is something you're interested in, there's a lot of good resources out there. Like I said, you know, Debbie Kay's The Sweet Snoopers program is fantastic. She does have a book. They have the online course that I took. It's something that, you know, if you've got a background in scent work, which I'm sure a lot of you guys that are listening do, it's something that you could definitely make a transition to. There are some differences like we've talked about, but it's something that, you know, if you're interested in, I really recommend pursuing it because we definitely need more just good service dog trainers, because unfortunately there's some people out there that, you know, I guess in dog training in general that, you know, they're scamming these people, you know, and they're producing dogs that don't alert, you know, correctly and charging a lot of money. And, you know, these people are, you know, getting scammed. And so I really think we need more trainers out there that can at least help with it. Maybe you don't want to do this full time, you know, and completely understand that, because there is a lot of things that go into it, you know, not just the scent work part of it. But even if you just wanted to offer, you know, help for people that needed, you know, just the medical alert side of it and, you know, didn't want to touch like the public access or any other tasks, that's something you could totally do, even if it's just online consulting, which is what I do, you know, and helping these people make that, you know, transition. Because a lot of it is similar, like we've talked about, as far as, you know, not making sure the scent's contaminated and pairing that scent with the reward. And you could really help a lot of people, you know, in doing this and helping them train their own dog, because there's a big need for it. And there's just not a lot of good resources out there for people to have that. So yeah, if you're interested in it, I really recommend reaching out, you know, to me or any of these other organizations, like I mentioned, that to help, you know, because we definitely need it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and we'll be sure to link some resources for folks in the show notes and how to contact you. So with that, where can people find you online if they're interested in learning more about this line of work or just, you know, following you online?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm on Facebook, just Rhianne Craven. I'm on Instagram as well at Ray the Dog Trainer. And also I'm available like for the service dog consulting at tenaciousdogtraining.com. And then my email is just rayannecraven@gmail.com. So any one of those avenues is perfectly fine to reach me on.
Well, again, thank you so much. And for everyone at home, I hope you learned a lot and are feeling inspired to get outside and be a canine conservationist in whatever way suits your passions and skill set. You can find out more about Canine Conservationists, join our courses, buy bento boxes, whatever it is you need, all over at canineconservationists.org. Until next time.